Welcome to Sound Off with Lewis Woodard.
How can you not know who Lewis is? Oh my God, you hear his voice, you recognize who he is.
Wrapping up the day in sports in a fast-paced, high-energy atmosphere. You got an opinion? Bring it strong or don't bring it at all.
I can say anything I want. That's the beauty of this country.
Dial 843-652-3776 or Sound Off on Twitter at 1003TheTeam.
This is a special person.
Now, your host, Lewis Woodard.
Happy Lincoln Park Bar and Grill Trivia Wednesday. As always, on Wednesday, we're going to drop that trivia question at 5:20 after we come back from break, second segment, or head into second segment, depending on how long-winded I get in the first one. But that's going to be at 520. 843-652-3776 is the number. Go ahead and put that in your contacts. You can hit Brian up quickly. It's actually a little amusing to see him struggle behind there, fielding as many phone calls as we get. $25 gift certificate on the line for that. And we begin today talking about coaches and what makes different guys successful and more or less what the South Carolina fan base is looking for in their next guy. I mean, Spurrier was successful because he just had a brilliant mind on offense. And there are a number of different ways to be successful, different number of different emphases your program can have for you to get the job done. And kind of on an unrelated but related note, there was an excellent piece in the Wall Street Journal today concerning Ron Rivera and how atypical he is as a head coach. And Ron Rivera is one of my favorite people in media. And I have to admit, I thought he was dead in the water. I mean, I've said this a number of times. I went to a press conference in 2012 when he was 2-8 in his second year coaching the Carolina Panthers, and his cumulative record at that point in time was 8-18. And I've never seen somebody more dead in the water in a press conference and battle their way back. And I think part of the reason why he was given a long enough leash to battle back is because he's such a great guy. I mean, people just like this guy. And I remember asking Mick Mixon in an interview, I believe the first week we had this show, a couple of months ago, you know, why is it that every season that guys really seem to play hard for the Panthers in the second half of the season? I shouldn't say play hard in the second half, but there have been a lot of instances with Ron Rivera where, in fact, each of his four seasons, when you look at him with the Carolina Panthers, the last half of the season, they have been tremendous. I mean, his first season, they win 4 out of their last 6. His second season, when it looks like he's about to get fired, they win 5 out of their last 6. They start off 1-2, and then they end up going 12-4 his third season. And then last year, they win their last 4 to make the playoffs. So they have absolutely closed red hot. Their December record is absurd under Ron Rivera. And a lot of those games, they were basically playing for his job. And besides being a great dude, I mean, you can say that about a lot of people. Oh, he's a great guy. I mean, clearly he's good at coaching football, too. But the approach that he takes with the Panthers in the locker room, I find very fascinating. This is in the Wall Street Journal by Sarah Larimer. And he has an office that's in a different area of Bank of America Stadium, but he's had a separate and alternate office basically set up in the locker room. And he just mills around the locker room and hangs out in the locker room like he's one of the guys. Like he basically just sits up, sets up shop in a locker, and guys BS with him. They talk to him about music, life. People are asking him whether they should get a dog, and he's giving them life advice, telling them having a puppy is like having a child. And it's a really interesting concept because there's this conception that the locker room is just for the guys and the guys only. And while the coach comes in there and everybody, you know, goes silent, he tells them what they're doing for the day, but he's not really a part of that culture. And it's really interesting for me to read as well, because when I was in school, again, a different sport, but I had a coach that basically was, you know, 35 going on 20. He felt like he was one of us. And in large part, we love the guy, and that's part of the reason why he probably competed so hard for him. And it seems like this is what Ron Rivera is drawing on. And he claims that he was hanging out with some fighter pilots in the offseason. By the way, I love the lengths that coaches go to find ways to be successful in crisis. You know, guys, you see the stuff on TV all the time. Shaka Smart, the head coach of Texas in basketball, he's always getting guys to train with Navy SEALs in the offseason. And one of the things that Ron Rivera says he learned from fighter pilots is the commanders really have to know what it's like up in the air so they don't act like they're above the guys that they outrank. They allow the fighter pilots, the guys who are actually out there flying the planes to be 100% honest with them and to address them as if they are not their superiors. And that's the way that Ron Rivera conducts his Carolina Panthers locker room. He lets guys talk to him frankly, and it says that he took them out for a really nice meal in Charlotte in 2013 and found out who was a great guy in the locker room, who wasn't, and who was an assistant coach the players liked and who didn't. And since then, he's made a number of adjustments. And I can't help but read that in 2013 and think, who was a Carolina Panther in 2013 that wasn't around in 2014 that there was some more than mild suggestion was difficult to deal with in the locker room and is now a Baltimore Raven? So I couldn't help but read that and do a little quick math there and say, man, maybe those players basically ran Smitty out of town. Dave Gettleman gets the blame for it. His name is put on it. But is this a result of Ron Rivera becoming essentially one of the players? And there are a lot of people that will look at this negatively and say, well, how is he going to tell them what to do? Because at some point in time, he's going to have to be an authority figure, and they're just going to look at him as Ron like he's one of the guys. And he seems to believe that having a more informal relationship with his players, they're going to have more loyalty to him and they're going to fight harder. And at the end of the day, a lot of it really does, I don't mean to oversimplify things, but it comes down to winning, right? I mean, if the guy's 2-14 this year, which he's not because they've already won four games, but you get the point. If he's 2-14, people are going to say, oh, well, the players don't respect him. He's too informal. He's not cracking the whip enough. You know, then again, if Bill Belichick, without the titles, and that name doesn't mean anything, if he just goes into a random NFL team like the Jaguars, who are unsuccessful and tries to run that place like a tyrant, is he going to get enough credibility from the locker room to behave like that? And it's just fascinating to me the differences in approach. And Ron Rivera's is so player-oriented and so informal that it shocked even me, knowing all the things that I know about how loyal the guys are to him. I mean, this idea that he would just hang out in the locker room after practice and BS around with the guys and listen to music, so much so that it's like he's actually one of them. It's not like he did it one day. He does it all the time. And Luke Kuechly actually has a quote in here that he says that he thinks that Ron Rivera does it because he misses being a football player. And that actually kind of made me sad on some level. But, you know, He clearly gets a lot of satisfaction out of coaching the game still. And once again, that's in the Wall Street Journal. Highly recommend that piece if you guys are interested in checking that out. And 843-652-3776, I mentioned that in the differences in coaching approach. I mean, to the point where you can be so dictatorial and micromanaging like Chip Kelly, where you take a daily urine sample from guys to make sure that they're hydrated. But you look at Chip Kelly, and every stop in his career, he's had a tremendous amount of success. I mean, this year right now, the Eagles are like 2-3, but that doesn't mean they're not going to make the playoffs. I haven't really seen anything crazy out of the NFC East now that Romo's hurt. But again, so many different ways to be successful, and that's what South Carolina now has to ask itself. You know, what is the identity of the program, and what do we want our next guy to be? What do we want him to look like? How do we want him to run the program? Or do you basically just say, hey, guys are successful for different reasons, and all I want is success. All I want is what's populating the left-hand column and not the right. And I thought this was very interesting. There were reports yesterday from South Carolina practice, and Sean Elliott, interim head coach, former offensive line coach, that Soulja Boy was playing during practice. And so it's clear that they are really trying to change the message and change the feel of the South Carolina program. Spurrier didn't have music playing. And so one of the first things Sean Elliott does is he tries to dial up the energy. And there are a lot of people that guessed what he was all about and that he would run the program like that. But it's fun to see that Soulja Boy is playing a practice. So you can see his stamp, like what things that he's going to do with South Carolina. You know, he's trying to make it a little more player-oriented. He's trying to make sure he connects with those kids. And you take a look at a lot of the names that people are mentioning right now, and there's basically, like, I would divide the hire into three different classes of people in terms of South Carolina could hire. The established, huge-name head coach that would be a coup to get, like Mark D'Antonio, South Carolina alum, who's 59 years old and has a chance to win a championship this year. Why would he go someplace else and rebuild it when Michigan State's paying him $4 to $5 million a year and he's got a team that's ready to compete right now? Unless he truly, truly loves his alma mater, I don't see why that would why that would even register with him. And he was asked this week that same question. In fact, it was earlier today when a member of the local media up there in East Lansing asked him if he had interest in the South Carolina job.
Coach, just want to get this out of the way. Your name's come up. This Steve Spurrier is retirement, South Carolina. Of course, you played there.
First question. Huh?
Yeah, just get it out of the way. Can you talk about that opening in South Carolina?
Yeah, Coach Spurrier's had an outstanding career there. It's my alma mater, and we're here to talk about Michigan.
He did not deny that he went to school there. So you're saying there's a chance.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
Oh, man, as much as we use that audio, I blew that, Brian. It's so you're telling me there's a chance. I got to stop misquoting Jim Carrey. That's a terrible thing to do.
It's all right. It happens a lot with movie quotes.
I love the idea that you're sitting around in a media room. And listen, I get how intimidating it is to ask questions in certain settings, especially in a press conference afterwards if the coach isn't thrilled to hear the question. But you can't lead things off and be like, hey, well, someone's got to jump on this bullet. So, Mark, you going to South Carolina? I mean, ask it a little differently. You know, ask him.
Andy, did your least favorite thing is that can you talk about it?
Yeah,
you
I'm not a big fan of talk about as a question because it really isn't a question. But, of course, he's got to play the Michigan Wolverines this weekend who have pitched three consecutive shutouts. The last time that happened, a defense pitched three consecutive shutouts, was Alabama in 2012. They happened to smoke Notre Dame and win a national championship. So he really, coaches all the time pull that I'm focused on winning today. I'm focused on winning this weekend. I don't have my mind on that job. He really has to be focused on matching wits with Harbaugh and trying to figure out how to get in the end zone on that team because no one has in 3 weeks. Charlie Strong is another name people love because he was a defensive coordinator for Lou Holtz. I don't know if his performance at Texas has dampened the way people would feel about him. Like, I really don't know. If Charlie Strong got the South Carolina job, let's just say that he surrenders at Texas or just decides to move to South Carolina before he gets fired. Whoever knows how that would happen, I'm not sure that South Carolina fans would be 100% thrilled about that. Right? I mean, the guy's 1-4 right now. I mean, it's That would be an interesting reaction to me, but his success at Louisville and his ties to South Carolina make him a name that people are talking about. So there are those guys that would be a coup to get. Then there is the group of the it mid-major coaches right now. Memphis's Justin Fuente, Western Kentucky's Jeff Brohm, Tom Herman, who was the offensive coordinator for Ohio State last year, and he is a head coach at Houston right now, and Chad Morris at Southern Methodist. Those guys that have some it factor, and then there's the coordinators from major programs like Kirby Smart at Alabama is getting a lot of run. People seem to be waiting on him to take his first head coaching job. But one thing that doesn't get talked about a lot when you're looking at a coordinator like, say, a Kirby Smart, now the salary would be a big deal for him because he's probably making about $1.5 million coordinating Nick Saban's defense at Alabama. But if he's a head coach at South Carolina, he's going to make at least $3 million. So they would be changing his pay scale significantly. But when you are bringing in a coordinator instead of a head coach, guy's not coming in with a staff. Like, putting together your staff of 9 assistants and everything else that entails is really difficult when you're starting from scratch, and that's something that people don't consider. Like, if Kirby Smart goes from Alabama to Columbia, he's got to find those 9 guys that he wants to work with, and is he going to be able to steal any of them from Alabama? Where is he going to find those guys? Whereas if you look at a guy like Tom Herman, you know, he's already got his staff. He might not want to take all of it from Houston to Columbia, but he at least has guys in place that he's worked with and having some degree of success with. And if I were South Carolina fans, I would be really interested in working. I would be really interested in Tom Herman because of his success with quarterbacks. I mean, as well as JT Barrett played last year, as well as Cardell Jones played, Braxton Miller before him, everyone was saying, how is it that Ohio State had this embarrassment of riches at quarterback? And there are so many schools in America that doesn't even have one. Well, who was coaching the quarterbacks? Who was the offensive coordinator? So, with a young Lorenzo Nunez, with McElwain coming in next year, that would be a really interesting name, and maybe that South Carolina job would be appealing to him because he sees that young quarterback talent, guys that he can work with immediately, and the bar is going to be pretty low theoretically. I mean, unless Sean Elliott figures out how to backdoor cover his way into a bowl game. And 500 in the SEC, which would be a miracle. I mean, you'd have to win at Texas A&M. You'd have to win against Florida, against Tennessee, and against Vanderbilt to go 4-4 in the SEC.
If that happened, I think he'd have the job
locked up. Then he, if he went down, he backdoor covers. then this is a silly conversation, and there is no coach. But it is an interesting question to me philosophically. Like, if you're Ray Tanner, do you then say, hey, there is one type of guy that I want to have, or, we want a defensive-minded coach in Columbia, or, hey, we want a guy like Tom Herman who works really well with quarterbacks, or are you sitting there saying, you know what, I just want to find a winner. I just want to find a guy that wins football games, and we'll figure out his style after that. And there are going to be a lot of people making this decision. I mean, he said there's going to be an advisory committee. He said that there's going to be a search firm. There's going to be a lot of stuff. 843-652-3776. Big Pauly getting things started on Sound Off. What's good, Big Pauly?
Hey, how's it going today, Lewis?
Doing well, man. What's on your mind?
Well, I was looking at the South Carolina job, and I'm wondering if they would be looking at the head coach of Utah. I mean, he's got the number 4 in the nation, but let's be honest, the program's Utah. It's not SEC. And more importantly, he's got connections with the West Coast recruiting. Okay, we have some great athletes. And then if he moves into the SEC, he can get involved in the recruiting down there. So he's coast-to-coast recruiting. He might be a great hire for South Carolina. And plus, he wants, I don't know him personally, but I'm guessing that, he wants to go against the best of the best, which is the SEC. You know, like Ric Flair said, you want to be the best, you got to beat the best.
I hear you're saying, Big Pauly. And if they could get Kyle Whittingham, I mean, I honestly think that if they could get Kyle Whittingham, South Carolina fans are doing backflips. I mean, that would be a massive, massive coup. A lot of people are mentioning him for the other USC right now because he does have ties out there to the West Coast, and there is this perception that he's really unhappy with his bosses at Utah. Now, I don't, Big Pauly, I hear what you're saying, that his connections to the West Coast could be beneficial, but if you're coaching South Carolina, I don't know that national recruiting and taking kids out of California is going to ever be your play, especially when there are so many good players in Georgia and Florida and some in South Carolina. I think Southern recruiting ties would be more important than West Coast recruiting ties for that particular gig. But as for why Whittingham would want to leave, I mean, like I said, there is a lot of smoke out there that he doesn't like his AD, and he's only making $2.6 million. South Carolina's paying $4 million. And for Whittingham, they might be able to pony up even more money than that. So South Carolina could be able to, by opening their job early, maybe they're hitting up his agent right now and just saying, hey, we're going to throw so much money at this guy until he says no. And, I mean, I agree with you that would be a home run hire for them. It's just, if you're Whittingham, aren't you sitting back there saying, SoCal? Like, I'm going to try to aggressively get that job. So I don't know if you're Kyle Whittingham for his career, if he would want that job in Columbia.
Well, the interesting part about that, though, is, when you say about recruiting in the Southeast, he can hire assistants who are familiar with or recruiting, guys who are familiar with the Southeast Conference, and he can get that recruitment there. The other thing I also wondered, and it struck me as odd, and it probably has, it's probably not relevant, but when the opening came up for the South, so this USC job for Southern California,
sure,
and then Steve Spurrier quit, I was like, well, he didn't retire, he resigned. If you leave the door open, maybe USC contacts him and say, hey, come on out to Southern California, you can play golf 365 days a year.
I think Steve Spurrier getting another college job would be about the craziest story ever. I mean, it just – and he even said it yesterday in his press conference, Big Pauly, that he is a liability in recruiting because, you start recruiting kids when they're 16 or 17. By the time they're 22, 23, they're fifth-year seniors, you're done coaching them. You're talking about the ball coach being 76, 77, and that's with his first recruiting class, not any subsequent class. So, unfortunately, that's what he has to deal with on the recruiting scene. It's not professional coaching. Like, no one's like, hey, how old is Bill Belichick? It's just, can you win in this year? And unfortunately, that's not the game in college because of how much you have to continuously build for 3, 4, 5 years in advance. But I do agree with you, Big Pauly, man. Whittingham would be a hell of a coup for Ray Tanner and company if they were able to get him.
Thanks.
Yep, appreciate the call, man. 843-652-3776 is the number. You never know with these jobs. And no one ever predicted that Arkansas was going to get Brett Bielema when he was busy winning 3 consecutive Big Tens at Wisconsin. But Arkansas was able to find out behind the scenes that he hated his boss, Barry Alvarez, that he was really dissatisfied with his compensation. And he was looking to get in the SEC because he thought it was going to be easier to win a championship that way. Now, that was in the BCS era. Now, in the playoff era, things might be a little more difficult because if the SEC is only getting one seat at the table out of four, then maybe he should have stayed in the Big Ten for title path purposes. But they were able to find out that he was dissatisfied with his boss. And maybe there's that guy out there. Maybe it's Kyle Whittingham. And he's going into South Carolina. As I said, expectations for next year aren't super high. There are reasons why it's an attractive job. All right, it is time now for our Lincoln Park Bar and Grill trivia question. Staying on the theme of head coaches being successful for different reasons, Pete Carroll and his Trojan Wars, or not his, but the Trojan Wars 30 for 30 that was on ESPN last night. Very fascinating, by the way. I just remembered how good Reggie Bush was in college watching some of those highlights, those cutbacks, man. Unbelievable.
That's been expunged from my memory.
I just don't even know how he hasn't been just a stud running back in the pros. I guess he hasn't run north to south well enough. I guess he doesn't block well enough. But anyways, Pete Carroll, what college? This is your Lincoln Park Bar and Grill trivia question, 843-652-3776. What college in the Carolinas was Pete Carroll an assistant for in the early 1980s? 843-652-3776. What college in the Carolinas did Pete Carroll assistant coach for in the early 1980s. Hit us up, tell Brian the answer, and we'll get you a $25 gift certificate to Lincoln Park Bar and Grill. Coming up next, if you have thoughts on South Carolina's next coach, hit us up. Also, we are going to get into Luke Kuechly's return to the field this weekend against the Seahawks. Some interesting comments of practice about his concussion.
Welcome back to Sound Off. Call 843-652-3776 and get loose.
My producer Brian marking the new era at South Carolina. Soldier Boy practice yesterday. We're bumping back with Soldier Boy. Sean Elliott trying to keep things new and exciting for the kids. You know, whatever works. I think that's the theme.
Someone might want to let him know that Soulja Boy hasn't been around since like I was in high school.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, see that's you started out here at Kiss 98.5, Brian, at our urban station. So that's we count on you for the hip hop analysis. That's what you add to this program is urban music.
Well, then Sean Elliott definitely needs to step his game up.
Yeah, needs to put some Drake out there. Thought it was interesting. Brandon McIlwain, who's a 4-star quarterback recruit, committed to South Carolina next year. Out of Pennsylvania. Also, some people are worried he could be a high draft pick in the big leagues this year, so they might lose him to Major League Baseball. But in terms of trying to convert him from a commit to getting his signature on the NLI, especially after what happened to South Carolina last year, never a guarantee. But he said his commitment status remains unchanged, and this is on sportstalksc.com. He says that he has a great relationship with Coach Elliott and Coach Mangus, and they are still around. So, if I'm a South Carolina fan, I'm reading that, I'm not too thrilled about that because, you know, what are the odds that the current coaching staff gets to stay in place or that someone's going to come in and keep Mangus and Elliott around? I don't know that McIlwain is a big enough deal that you try and keep guys on staff simply to keep his commitment and convert into a signature. But he is not decommitting as of yet. It's just we'll probably have to do with who's on the staff coming up into February, which should be very important. I mean, people say this all the time. Kids commit to the school. They're going to a school for 4 years. That's where they're getting their education. That's true, but you can get a similar education almost anywhere. Unless you're studying something super specific and you're like, I need an undergrad college of business. I need to major in chemistry. I need to be an engineer. Like, there are certain majors, but if you're getting a liberal arts education, I would say you can get a very similar one in a lot of different places, and who your teammates are and who your coaches are becomes more important than what campus you go to. Because if you're 3-9, you're going to hate life no matter how pretty the campus is, no matter how pretty the girls are, no matter how good the degree is. If you're not winning, it's not going to be fun. If you're a competitive guy and you're not winning, it's not going to be fun. So I'm always for kids picking coaches and ones that aren't going to leave. But that's always hard to figure out because, as South Carolina has showed, you can go from fourth in the AP poll to bottoming out in almost the blink of an eye. I mean, that's crazy, less than 2 years. 843-652-3776. Kind of getting into coaching, and if you're setting up a program, if you're Ray Tanner, what style of coach you would look for the next guy at South Carolina, whether you would have some philosophy or just try to get the guy that, that has a proven track record for winning. Because, you know, I don't know that you go into a search saying, you know, I want a guy that's a hammer recruiter, or I want a guy that works with quarterbacks, because you might end up taking away someone who, you know, wins for different reasons. We did have a Lincoln Park Bar and Grill trivia winner during the break. Ashton called in. Pete Carroll was the defensive coordinator, how about this, at NC State from 1980 through 1982. And NC State, during that time, 16-17, and was 8-10 in the SEC. And the 3 years with Pete Carroll as their defensive coordinator. Monty Kiffin, Lane Kiffin's dad, that was his only stop. That was his only stop as a head coach, which is interesting to see. And once again, Ashton ends up getting hooked up with that $25 gift certificate to Lincoln Park Bar and Grill. Lincoln Park has the 30 flat-screen TVs you would expect from a sports bar, but the quality of the food, it's what makes Lincoln Park sports dining. Lincoln Park is located off the bypass across from Queens Harbor in Surfside Beach. I was out there last Sunday watching the 1 o'clock games, NFL action at Lincoln Park. Had two of their $5 tailgate plates. Really good. Pork sliders, hand-cut fries, and I went back for more. I had to get the buffalo shrimp. Both of them were on point.
I know. You're killing me talking about all that during the thing. I was like, oh, man, I need to go up there and get some food.
By the way, it's a good thing Brian can edit those commercials down, because I had some language that we couldn't put on the radio, correct? I kept on saying soft-shell pretzels instead of soft pretzels. If there were some Anchorman-style outtakes, that would have been quite entertaining. Luke Kuechly's going to be back this weekend against the Seahawks, which is obviously a great thing. I mean, A.J. Klein filled in admirably, but especially anytime you're going up against a quarterback that can break loose the way that Russell Wilson does, you want an athletic middle linebacker that's able to run him down, keep an eye on him, can make plays matched up against a tight end, although Russell Wilson seems to have forgotten that he has Jimmy Graham. Not that I'm a bitter fantasy owner by any means, just point that out. and Luke Kuechly's trip through the concussion protocol to me is a very interesting process, because I just heard over and over again concussion protocol, and that's just something that we hear as a term, but what does it actually mean? And we went over the five steps last week when we were talking about it. Certain days you get cleared to just be on an exercise bike and stretch, then to start doing light drills, then to getting into the film room as well. There's a process, and the final one is an independent neurologist, someone who's not hired by the team, has to say you're ready to play football. That just happened for Kuechly on Monday. So he's back into the fold. He was back at practice yesterday. And believe it or not, he said that was the first concussion he's had in his entire career.
You know, it's one of those things, it's hard to explain. You have headaches, stuff's just not quite right. And that's the best way to describe it. You know, it's hard. You know, I always wondered if I knew, when I've been playing, sometimes you wonder, do I know I have one? And I knew I had one. And it's weird. It's one of those things you can't quite explain, because it's just something's wrong, something's not right. Maybe stuff's a little slow, so now everything's back to full speed and good to go.
You would think that as many times as Luke Kuechly's put a hat on somebody, I mean, he hits hard, he's led the NFL in tackles, he's led the NCAA in tackles, and I mean, you'd think just by the sheer volume of tackles the guy's made that at some point in time that he would have gotten a concussion, but that's encouraging to hear. If you're a Carolina Panthers fan, you wouldn't want it to be like, yeah, it's probably like my seventh or eighth one, I should probably give it up the next time it happens. And his perspective on taking rest after having that first career concussion, I thought's pretty sound.
I was told that as long as you give it time and let it heal, that you're not going to be any more susceptible to one in the future. And that's one of the things is, I think if you can be smart about it and let it heal, then like they told me, that you don't have to worry about it in the future, because once it heals and you're good.
I'm not an independent neurologist, nor a neurologist of any kind. But, you know, I'm glad he's taking his head seriously. It's a fairly expensive head for the Carolina Panthers. They've been giving him, committed to $11, $12 million a year for the next couple of years? And that defense is considerably better with him out there on the field. Now, the Panthers' pass rush has been kind of hodgepodge this year, and that seems to be the one thing that has been crushing Seattle, their offensive line. So I don't know if I want to look at this matchup and say it's going to be a good day for Charles Johnson, Coney Ealy, and the boys to really get after Russell Wilson, or if it's just going to say, you know what, this is going to be the one day where it doesn't look like Russell Wilson's going to be fighting for his life.
I forgot Rodeo Allen.
the Detroit and the Fresh Prince of Bel Air, as they're calling him. Del Air, the guy they signed off the Redskins practice squad that got two sacks his first game.
Not familiar. Lynch comes back this week, too. You definitely need Kuechly to stop
him. You know what? Thomas Rawls has been lights out, man. Guy's been averaging 5 yards a carry in Marshawn's stead.
They're still saying he's going to get the full workload, though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sure when you've got Marshawn Lynch coming back, you use him, right?
Yeah, but he rushed for 170 yards last week. That's got to raise some eyebrows, regardless of who's in there.
Yeah. Marshawn means a big deal in that locker room, though. They're not just going to totally split carries 50-50 with a guy who's done as much for them. I mean, I realize Pete Carroll's a bit of a maverick, but even then, he's not gonna make Rawls the one, you know, the go-to running back based on 2 or 3 weeks when you've got a body of work over an entire career with Lynch. I mean, I would look at that as Rawls probably gonna get 5 carries, something like that. And if Lynch is hurt, then they've got an excellent backup plan. But yeah, the Panthers are gonna have to deal with a super mobile quarterback, a good running game, but that hasn't, you know, a good pass rush is like Detroit. Not a good football team, but they have a good pass rush. They made Russell Wilson look like he was about to get murdered out there 2 weeks ago. So, more on that game later in the week. 843-652-3776. Josh Norman, again with the bizarre locker room behavior. I'll explain next. This is Sound Off. Back on Sound Off Sports Radio, 100.3 of the team. Brian, is this more of Soulja Boy?
You know it.
Is this more Soulja Boy? Okay. Gamecocks yesterday practicing to Soulja Boy. Apparently that's a difference maker. That's gonna get them back on the win column in the SEC.
It's
gonna have nothing to do with with them playing Vanderbilt or being at home whatsoever. It's gonna be the Soulja Boy in practice leading up to it. Josh Norman, I can't even wrap my head around how bizarre this guy is. I mean, I love the fact that he plays for the Carolina Panthers, and as long as he is a Carolina Panther, I'm excited about that because he might be the defensive MVP of the first 4 or 5 weeks of the NFL season. The first quarter of the NFL season, if it were over right now, he might be the NFL's defensive MVP. I mean, how can you argue with routinely shutting down top wide receivers? I mean, he played Hopkins better than anybody has by far this year. He's got 4 picks and 2 pick-sixes. And he does really strange things also, which entertain me. At training camp, he was walking around with a walking stick and was worried about wildlife at Wofford. Now, I haven't been up to Wofford, so I don't know what kind of dangerous wildlife. Like, is it Jurassic Park up there at Wofford? Like, if, you know, because if there are velociraptors, like, charging in out of nowhere, then maybe I understand arming himself with a walking stick like that, though I'm not sure what that would do. The latest thing today, Brian tells me that Josh Norman is keeping a tomahawk in his locker, in the Panthers' locker room. This is his explanation for having a tomahawk.
My tomahawk.
Is your tomahawk?
Yes, my tomahawk.
Where does that come from?
I got a little black foot in me, so, you know, I kind of bring my Indian side out sometimes. That's my box opener, believe it or not. I kind of open my boxes with it, so it kind of, you know, helps me out.
He's just open up so many cardboard boxes, he needs to have a tomahawk laying around. That's some uncomfortable laughter right there. Brian, I'm literally done with that. Can we stop that? He's opening so many boxes. I've never been, you know, occasionally you have that feeling like, man, I wish I had a bottle opener on my keychain. I wish I didn't forget this. Not once in my life have I said, man, I kind of wish I had a tomahawk right now. I really, I'm being slowed down by my lack of having a tomahawk. You know, Ron Rivera's keeping things loose in that locker room. He allows guys to have tomahawks.
Hopefully, he doesn't get into like a Gilbert Arenas-esque weapons
armory
in his locker room.
Yeah. Instead of Javaris Crittenden and Gilbert Arenas, it's Josh Norman and someone else has to have like a samurai sword. There's
maybe Cam Newton.
Nah. Cam's too busy wearing his like pink capris and like leopard print stuff. He's out there on the cutting edge of fashion.
Oh, he's Superman. I forgot. He doesn't
need
a weapon.
He's not trying to arm himself. Well, yeah. I mean, Cam's. You know, Cam has proven that he can handle Josh Norman with his bare hands. He doesn't need to arm himself. Oh, man. What do you do when you walk by a locker and you see a tomahawk? You say Josh being Josh?
Walk even faster?
Yeah, no, seriously. But I will say this, though. The kind of crazy that Greg Hardy had that always made me uncomfortable, Josh Norman doesn't have. Like, he's just got the bizarre crazy. Like, it makes me laugh. Like, Josh Norman doesn't make me uncomfortable. It's just like, okay, dude's trying pretty hard. He's got a tomahawk in his locker. But hey, four picks, two pick sixes, you can anything you want, Josh. As long as you don't attack somebody with that tomahawk in the locker room, I'm good.
A bow staff, some more Napoleon.
Hey, whatever he needs. Whatever he needs. Well, he did have the bow staff out of Wofford because the wildlife was dangerous. Now, one other thing, speaking of sports here locally, I guess Josh is kind of regional now, but used to be local with Coastal Carolina. The Big South Tournament, as we announced yesterday, they put out a press release saying that the conference basketball tournament, among other conference tournaments, would no longer be at Coastal Carolina University. Yeah, yep, they're taking their toys and going home. Now, at the time, I had no idea, but my roommate, Ryan Young, had been working on that story forever, and he was a little irritated that he had kind of almost a complete story ready to go, and he thought the announcement was going to come in November. So they didn't hit publish on the story, and the Big South releases a press release. So he did have it in more in-depth, right? You can either be right, or you can have the complete story. And he put the complete story out there. I recommend you guys take a look at it, myrtlebeachonline.com. And one thing to me that's really interesting here is they knew that the Big South rule said that within 2 years, like if you don't give them 2 years advance warning, within 2 years of leaving, you're not allowed to host conference championships. But the entire momentum for the basketball tournament had been a host site is unfair. And why are they saying that? Because probably because Coastal won the last 2 years. That randomly a school, because it's a nice destination, could get to play for an NCAA tournament bid, their conference championship on their home floor and win. And of the 3 years that it's been at Coastal Carolina, they've won twice. So that didn't sit well with the other coaches. And there had been momentum to change this. And what they were going to change it to was top seed hosting. And who can argue with that, right? Because then it makes the regular season more interesting again. It gives the regular season critical importance if you get to have the conference tournament at your home floor. And the Big South bylaws said that if hosting is based on merit, then you can't take the tournament away because you're salty they're leaving the conference. So they thought that, okay, the deal for it automatically going to Coastal Carolina is over, but they thought if Coastal were to win the Big South regular season, which it hasn't the last 2 years, but if it were, that they would get to host again. But the Big South decides at the last minute, no, we are going to open up the bidding process. It's not going to go to the top seed, and Myrtle Beach is out of it because Coastal Carolina is leaving, and we're salty about it. And this was Kyle Kalander on the Big South's website. He's the commissioner of the conference, explaining this whole process.
Well, Big South Conference bylaws stipulate that a member that leaves prior than 2 years is no longer eligible to host championships. Coastal Carolina informed us that they will be leaving as of July 1st, 2016 to join the Sun Belt Conference. And so that necessitated us in examining the three championships they're hosting, basketball, baseball, and outdoor track and field. So what has been determined through the Council of Presidents at the Big South Conference is that Coastal Carolina would not host those predetermined championships, and those will be moving to other locations.
And it does seem kind of like it's BS, because Coastal Carolina's correspondence with Kalander had been up until this point that, you know, hey, as long as it is based on merit, it's going to end up going to the team that's the top seed. And then out of nowhere, the conference presidents basically get together and say, no, we can't stomach the possibility that it would still go to Coastal Carolina because we're mad about it. So we're going to open up the bidding and they're not going to have a chance at it. And one of our listeners yesterday hit me up and said that I should have Kalander on the program and interview him about this. And here's the thing with conference commissioners, guys. And I know you guys would probably love it if I had another awkward interview with the conference commissioner, but I try to not make that my specialty. he's just doing what the presidents of the other colleges say. Like, I don't think Kyle Kalander just gets to say and ignore Liberty's president, ignore Campbell's president, ignore UNC Asheville's president. I don't think that he just gets to sit around and say, you know what, at the end of the day, I'm really mad at Coastal Carolina. It's those collective presidents who tell him then to tell Dr. DeCenzo at Coastal that, hey, there's no way you're hosting. And it is unfortunate. It's unfortunate. I mean, they were basically going to change it to top seed hosting because people were mad that Coastal, not as the top seed, made the tournament back-to-back years because they had home court advantage. And then they were like, no, wait a second. There's a possibility of them hosting it now, so let's just open up the bids knowing they can't get it. And it is what it is, but at the end of the day, this is what I said yesterday. It's a divorce, and the Big South wants its engagement ring back. I mean, they're asking for their diamond back. It's as simple as that. I still think the moves to the Sun Belt far outweigh the costs, but some people here locally, I mean, that is money coming into the community that's no longer coming in, and I happen to know somebody personally who doesn't have a job because of this. You know, her job was to help organize this tournament. Her job doesn't exist anymore because the tournament is no longer being run by the Myrtle Beach Chamber of Commerce. Visit MyrtleBeach.com. 843-652-3776. Eddie is on the line. Eddie, what's up, man?
Hey, Lewis, man, you kind of explained it a little better than I was going to explain it to. I love the well, their diamond ring analogy back. That was fantastic.
Well, we got you in the line, Eddie. Tear it up, man. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, to me, it's just sour grapes on the Big South part, because the Big South knows that Coastal has by far all the best facilities, baseball, football, and basketball, playing the best golf courses, playing the best soccer field. You name it, we've got the best. And the Big South just got relegated to would have run, has been power conference in the FCS because we're leaving. And that's all I got, buddy. Bye.
Yeah, well said. And the other aspect of it, too, is all the hotels in the Grand Strand. It makes it such a unique place to host a conference tournament. And I have no doubt that even though it's an ideal place, who doesn't want to go hang out at the beach? Great facilities, access to all these hotels. I'm sure in the back of their mind, part of it was, hey, let's keep Coastal Carolina happy, right? If Coastal Carolina and Liberty are the two schools that mean the most to this conference long term, let's try and make sure both of those two schools are fed and happy. And then Coastal leaves anyways. Yeah, they're going to be salty about it. And then I thought it was pretty funny that Kyle Kalander, at the end of this, sort of you can't call it a teleconference. We call it a webcast. I'm not sure. Hey, whatever. He says that Visit MyrtleBeach.com has been a great sponsor, and he hopes they continue to support the Big South.
Well, one thing I really would like to add is, you know, Visit MyrtleBeach.com has been our title sponsor of our basketball championships for a number of years, and they've been super partners. We really regret that we have to leave the Myrtle Beach area because of their partnership and the great job they've done supporting our student athletes and our institutions. Certainly, we're hopeful they'll stay involved with the Big South Conference in the future.
I would love to hear that, how that phone call would go. Hey, Myrtle Beach Chamber of Commerce, it's your boy Kyle. You guys still want to support our conference? I know we took it away from you. I know it's no longer in your city, but you want to throw us some sponsorship dollars? Yeah, it's at UNC Asheville. Let's get some
people. I think they would have taken it back even if we gave them the 2 years notice or whatever he's saying is the reason they're moving it. They wouldn't let us have it if they're like, oh, Coastal's leaving. Let's just give them more money.
Well, right. No. I mean, that was kind of the essence of Ryan's piece on MyrtleBeachOnline.com, is just basically like everything was set in stone. They had email correspondence between Kalander and President DeCenzo that said, okay, this is what's going to happen. It's going to go to the high seed, the conference regular season. Winner is going to get to host the tournament. If you guys win, because it's based on merit, you guys will get to host. That's the way it's going to be. And then 2 or 3 days later, they're like, yeah, sorry about that. We're going to put it up to bid, and we know that you guys can't win the bid. So, I mean, I don't know what power player leaned on Kalander, but someone did. I don't know if it's the president of Liberty. I don't know if it's the president of UNCA. One of those presidents, or if not all of them, were like, no, this is BS. We can't have any possibility that Coastal gets to host.
So I guess Kalander's not the president of everybody like Blatter.
No, conference commissioners are anything but the president of everybody. Like, they're trying to collect votes to get stuff done. But there's no doubt, I mean, our boy Carl Benson didn't bring Coastal Carolina into the Sun Belt. He helped facilitate it, but the presidents of the Sun Belt brought Coastal Carolina in. So they are, you know, it's like Roger Goodell, right? People want to bang on him, but he is doing what the majority of the owners tell him to do at all times, because they pay him, well, they pay him like $50 million a year, something absurd, to basically just be their mouthpiece. I'll take that job. Thank you. Anyways, coming up next on Sound Off, Rick Pitino with some really interesting quotes on his NCAA investigation with prostitution and recruiting. Back on Sound Off, Sports Radio 100.3, The Team. Brian, does Soulja Boy not have three different tracks? We had to break the streak here. I thought this was
he's a one-hit wonder.
The Sean Elliott support show. I tell you what, I always pull for the interim head coach. It worked out for Dabo. Doesn't usually work out for people. But that's a guy that's not on everybody's radar. And, you know, there are reasons why he would be a decent head coach, I think. I'm pulling for him. He's an intense dude.
I'm surprised Hoke didn't get it.
It's kind of like with a backup quarterback that gets in and gets his shot to get in there and sling it, like Jake DeLone back in the day when the Panthers finally decided Rodney Pete sucked, Tom Brady when Bledsoe gets hurt. I love seeing the backup quarterback go in and start making plays.
So you agree with Jared Jones that Brandon Whedon's got the
corner? Brandon Whedon is the best quarterback. I mean, Roger Staubach, Troy Aikman, Tony Romo, all of those guys are backseat to Brandon Whedon when it comes to Dallas.
Except for Matt Castle.
Yeah. All right, now, Rick Pitino, very awkward press conference. He basically said the NCAA told him not to talk about this, but he ends up talking about it, and that is the accusation in a book by a Louisville madam that her and her girls were paid to have sex with recruits. And it is one of the more bizarre NCAA scandals lately. And Rick Pitino's tactic here is to basically say, we don't get great recruits, so I don't get this as an idea.
See, we've been successful here with Russ Smith being a two-star basketball player. Gorky Zhang was not a top 60 starting for the Minnesota Timberwolves. Terry Rozier wasn't top 50 in the nation, the 16th draft pick of the Celtics. Cal Keurig and Larry O'Bannon came here as walk-ons and left as celebrated athletes. Now the difficult thing, the why part. And I don't have any answers to it.
That seems just such a crazy response to me. Like, hey, we're not using prostitutes to get recruits because we don't get good recruits. I mean, that's not answering the question at all, right? That's like if somebody was like, hey, did you steal from Cumulus? I'm like, I'm a good guy. What? I'm a good guy. Like, you know, that's just total misdirection right there. I don't care what Russ Smith and Gorgie Jang's recruiting rankings were. It's admirable that you developed them into better players than the analysts anticipated when they were 18 years old. That has nothing to do with your methods for getting them to campus.
And he only listed like 10 dudes. How many people get recruited to a school that don't even end up going there? Like,
yeah, I mean, I mentioned this. Like, it just seems like the dumbest thing ever because you're relying on people to be silent that don't have loyalty to you, right? These aren't players on your team. These are kids getting recruited. And that's why that kid at Ohio State said, yeah, that happened on my recruiting visit to Louisville. He has no loyalty to the program. I mean, in addition to being, you know, a terrible idea for someone that's supposed to be some kind of mentor and leader in the lives of young people to be introducing them to prostitutes. But at the same time, it's like, you know, this is a poorly executed bad idea. Anyways, that one's going to be fascinating to see how it unfolds. North Carolina's problems, the NCAA, a little different than Louisville, still unresolved, and Syracuse having some problems with the NCAA. Boeheim's not going to coach for the first half of the season. So your ACC powerhouses in basketball this year, ladies and gentlemen. Everyone gives SEC football all of the crap for having the bag man, but ACC basketball seems to be a bit crooked. All right, let's do Call of the Day.
It's time for the most coveted prize in North America. Sound off Call of the Day.
Eddie, bringing the heat. preaching the truth, saying the Big South. Just a little injured about Coastal Carolina leaving.
To me, it's just sour grapes on the Big South part because the Big South knows that Coastal has by far all the best facilities, baseball, football, and basketball, playing the best golf courses, playing the best soccer field. You name it, we've got the best.
Eddie, that was almost like a professional wrestling speech there. He's bringing it at the Big South. Kyle Kalander better not show up on campus when Eddie's there. Matt tweets out 1003, the team, all them flavors, and they had to choose salty. Big South, man. Big South. All right, Sports Talk's coming up next. Corn Blue McCreary. Sure they will have much and more about the South Carolina coaching situation. Stay right here.